Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seeded Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with Gideon versus Zeba and Zalmunna. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thank you, Bob. We are studying the book of Judges, and we have been considering the career of Gideon, the fifth judge. Israel was fighting back against the terrible oppression of Midian, their neighbors to the east, with kind of a whole conglomeration of neighbors to the east led by Midian. These enemies were not just coming into Israel and stealing from them and looting, like so many enemies did, but they were actually destroying their food supply, not even taking it for themselves, but just destroying it. And so it seems that they were trying to wipe Israel out altogether. And the Lord was allowing this because of Israel's unfaithfulness and worshiping idols instead of him. But the Lord called Gideon to get the victory over Midian, and Gideon had over 12,000 soldiers. But the Lord said that was too many. He wanted to show that he could give them the victory through many less. And so by various tests, he sent away all but 300. Now, Gideon was maybe starting to doubt a bit again. Gideon was not exactly the most courageous guy. But the Lord had him sneak into the Midianite camp, and he heard one of them telling a dream that showed that Gideon and the army were going to get the victory. So the plan was he had his men surround the Midianite camp with trumpets in one hand and a torch inside a jar in the other. And they sounded the trumpets, broke the jars, and waved the torches. And the enemy army thought they were surrounded by a hostile force, and they panicked, and the various parts of the army camp started fighting each other and killing each other. So there was a great victory through this panic that the Lord threw them into. So this victory wasn't Gideon's victory at all, but it was really a victory given him by the Lord. Now we were on Judges chapter 7 and verse 23, where we read, "And the men of Israel gathered together from Naphtali, Asher, and all Manasseh, and pursued the Midianites." So after the army is routed by this panic, these three tribes, Naphtali, Asher, and Manasseh, gather together to pursue them and basically chase them out of the land. Verse 24, "Then Gideon sent messengers throughout all the mountains of Ephraim, saying, 'Come down against the Midianites and seize from them the watering places as far as Bethbara and the Jordan.' Then all the men of Ephraim gathered together and seized the watering places as far as Bethbara and the Jordan." So Gideon sends messengers throughout the hill country of Ephraim. And this was the most powerful tribe in Israel in the northern part of Israel. In the southern part, of course, it was Judah. But in the hill country of Ephraim, he asks them to prepare. They're chasing the army, and their Midianite army is heading back east toward their homeland. And so he asks them to fortify the waters of Bethbara, which means house of the ford, and therefore fortify the Jordan River. Basically, this fleeing army, the most difficult part for them of getting back home will be crossing the Jordan River, because that was a natural boundary, and to get an army across it was difficult. So they would naturally head for the fords, the house of the ford, Bethbara. And so if they would just fortify the house of the ford, well, it would be very difficult for them. They'd have to try to swim the river at a very difficult place, cross through the mud where they'd get bogged down. So it'd be very hard for them to escape back to their lands if they only would guard the fords. So that's what he calls on Ephraim to do. And it's very successful, verse 25. "And they captured two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb. They killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and Zeeb they killed at the winepress of Zeeb. They pursued Midian and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon on the other side of the Jordan." So because they are guarding the only ways across Jordan, they capture there two princes of the Midianites, these two men, Oreb and Zeeb. Oreb means raven, and Zeeb means wolf. So these men were supposedly high and mighty princes of the Midianites. Well, they had been. But now they are captured by the Ephraimites. And they execute them. They execute Oreb on what comes to be known as the Rock of Oreb, since he was executed on it. And then they execute Zeeb at what later gets to be known as the winepress of Zeeb. And this is all while Midian is being chased out of the land, and are captured at the fords. So they execute these men, and they bring their heads, the heads of these two princes, to Gideon, back where he is waiting on the west side of the Jordan. So this was a great victory and a great event for Israel. Remember, this was one of the most dangerous times they had. We saw some of the previous oppressions, where they were just put to very heavy tribute, or one of the oppressions, they were capturing their young women to support their polygamy. But at least they were leaving the people alive. I mean, this oppression was literally trying to wipe them off the face of the earth. And so this was one of the most terrible oppressions they ever had to deal with. And so it was a great victory when these enemies were destroyed. So this victory is commemorated several times in Scripture. It's mentioned in Psalm 83, starting in verse 9. Speaking of enemies, it says, "Deal with them as with Midian, as with Sisera, as with Jabin at the brook Kishon, who perished at Endor, who became as refuse on the earth. Make their nobles like Oreb and like Zeeb, yes, all their princes like Zeba and Zalmunna, who said, 'Let us take for ourselves the pastures of God for a possession.'" So here it says, "Let all the enemies be like these." And it mentions, of course, what we saw was the previous oppression, the Canaanites with Sisera and Jabin. And then it mentions these Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb, and the princes we'll see in the next chapter, Zeba and Zalmunna. And we read a little bit about their motivations. They wanted the land of Israel for themselves. And first they wanted to wipe the inhabitants out of it. They wanted all the Israelites dead so they could just take possession of the land and wouldn't have anybody to fight them for it. Isaiah, the other great book of poetry in the Old Testament, he mentions this victory as well in Isaiah chapter 10 and starting in verse 24. "Therefore, thus says the Lord God of hosts, 'O my people who dwell in Zion, do not be afraid of the Assyrian. He shall strike you with a rod and lift up his staff against you in the manner of Egypt. For yet a very little while and the indignation will cease, as will my anger in their destruction. And the Lord of hosts will stir up a scourge for him, like the slaughter of Midian at the rock of Oreb. As his rod was on the sea, so will he lift it up in the manner of Egypt.'" So here he mentions he's going to destroy the Assyrian like Midian was destroyed at the rock of Oreb. So this was a famous victory in Israel's history, and that was probably largely because of the seriousness of the oppression that they were suffering from these wicked kings of the Midianites. Well, Gideon has had a great victory. And so you would think all Israel would be turning out to offer him praise. But as we start Judges chapter 8, we see that's not the case. Instead of praising him, Gideon actually faces opposition from his fellow Israelites. Judges 8 and verse 1. "Now the men of Ephraim said to him, 'Why have you done this to us by not calling us when you went to fight with the Midianites?' And they reprimanded him sharply." So Ephraim, the ones he called upon to take and fortify the fords of Jordan and, of course, destroy the Midianites there when they tried to cross, well, they're upset that he didn't call them originally to help in the fight against Midian. Now remember, Gideon didn't have much help because the Lord didn't want him to. He wanted him to only have 300. But Ephraim, we need to understand, is a very jealous type of tribe. Remember, there were two tribes given to Joseph. He was the firstborn, not the oldest. Firstborn doesn't mean necessarily oldest, but the firstborn meaning that he was the one who was promoted to the first position over all his brothers, even though he wasn't the oldest. And he got the double portion of the firstborn, which meant he got two tribes instead of one. And his two tribes were Manasseh, his oldest son, and Ephraim. But the Lord had predicted that Ephraim the younger would be greater than the older. And indeed, they generally were in size and power. But Ephraim, though they were a very great tribe, they were ultimately overshadowed by Judah, the tribe from whom King David came, and ultimately from whom Christ came. But Ephraim, in spite of their probably being the second largest tribe in Israel, they were very jealous. It seems that they always felt that they should be first, and they were second. And so they never liked to be slighted in any way. They would get very upset if they thought they were not given the respect they deserved. So they're upset that Gideon, this guy from Manasseh, Joseph's other tribe, their smaller, it seems they look at them as kind of a rival tribe, that he didn't call them to fight against Midian in the first place. So they're just plain jealous, I think, here of Manasseh, and think that Gideon is not respecting them. Verse 2, so he said to them, what have I done now in comparison with you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer? So Gideon is very gracious. He might have chided these Ephraimites back, and they probably deserved it. What a ridiculous attitude. When they had gotten this great victory this day, and there was certainly enough credit to go around for all, for them to attack and berate Gideon was just very small. It's very small. But Gideon belittles himself. He says, what are you talking about? Isn't the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the wine, the vintage wine of Abiezer? So he's like saying, your grape juice is better than Abiezer's finest wine. Now, Abiezer means my father is help, and he was one of Manasseh's subtribes, and of course, probably Gideon's subtribe since he mentions it. So he says, your grape juice is better than our vintage wine. So why are you complaining? What have I done in comparison with you? And then he points out to them, verse 3, God has delivered into your hands the princes of Midian, Oreb and Zeeb. And what was I able to do in comparison with you? Then their anger toward him subsided when he said that. So he says, if you wanted glory, you are the ones who captured Oreb and you captured Zeeb. And you are the ones who slew so many of the Midianites at the fords. Now what had Gideon done? He and his 300 men had stood around the enemy camp, blown trumpets and broken pots and waved torches. And the Lord gave the victory. I mean, what had they done? Nothing. Just caused a panic and the Lord gave the victory. So he says, you are the ones who captured these princes. You are the ones who got all the glory. Well, that staved off the anger of the Ephraimites. And this reminds me of the proverb that says, a peaceful answer turns away wrath. And that's just what Gideon did. But remember this, Ephraim's bad attitude. Because we'll see their attitude doesn't get better in later judgeships and later centuries. It gets worse. And finally, they have to have a terrible lesson to check their proud attitude. Verse 4. When Gideon came to the Jordan, he and his 300 men who were with him crossed over, exhausted but still in pursuit. So Ephraim gets this victory, and it seems that they're satisfied and head home. But Gideon and his 300 men are not satisfied. They aren't about to let Midian escape to rally their forces and regain their power. So he and his 300 men, this tiny little force of 300 men, they chased the Midianites across the Jordan. Now, the Jordan was kind of the eastern border of the main part of Israel. Remember, 2.5 of the tribes, Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh, obviously not Gideon's half, but Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh were on the east side of Jordan, but they were always a little bit more vulnerable, especially to those tribes from the east, than the rest of Israel were. So Jordan, for 9.5 of the tribes anyway, was their eastern boundary. And so they cross Jordan, and they're chasing the Midianites who made it across and were getting away. Now, this has been a hard day. They've been chasing the Midianites all day, so they're exhausted. But they're not about to give up. They're going to follow out this victory until it's complete. And that's a good lesson for all of us. When the Lord gives you a victory, don't just sit on your laurels. Keep going with it. They're exhausted, but still in pursuit. So verse 5, then he said to the men of Succoth, please give loaves of bread to the people who follow me, for they are exhausted, and I am pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, kings of Midian. So he comes to a city called Succoth, which means booths. And this was a place where Jacob, back in the book of Genesis, had built booths for his cattle, and apparently a home for himself, at least for a time. He was east of the Jordan by the Jabbok River, just east of the Jordan. So he comes upon this city. This was a city of the tribe of Gad. And again, Gad was one of the 2.5 tribes that were east of Jordan. So he asks for loaves of bread for he and his men. Now, bread for them was kind of a symbol for food. When you're asking for bread, it means you're asking for food. He basically wants them to feed he and his men. Now, this would not be a too burdensome thing for this town because he only has 300 men. It's not like they're going to have to waste a huge amount of food. And he tells them that he is chasing Zeba and Zalmunna. So even though Oreb and Zeeb have been defeated, there are still two kings of Midian that need to be defeated. Zeba, which means a slaying, referring to a sacrificial victim, and Zalmunna, which can mean from whom protection is denied Or it could also mean without shadow. I wonder what would entice you to name your kid without shadow. But anyway, he's chasing these Midianite kings. So he says, feed my men because we are on this important mission and we need food. Verse 6, and the leaders of Succoth said, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna now in your hand that we should give bread to your army? So the leading men of Succoth did not take Gideon and his force of 300 seriously, even though they'd already gotten this great victory. So they say, well, have you already gotten the victory over Zeba and Zalmunna that we should give you food? So they're acting like, well, if you had already won, then we'd feed you. Then we'd give you a victory celebration. But you haven't won yet, so forget it. And basically what they're saying is they don't think that he will get the victory. They don't think he will ever defeat Zeba and Zalmunna. So they're basically mocking him. They're making fun of him. They're saying, you really expect us to believe that with this little tiny pathetic force of 300, you're going to defeat this giant army? Forget it. Why would we waste good food on you when you're all about to die? So that's the attitude of these men of Succoth. Well, that was not just an insult toward Gideon, but that was also an insult toward the Lord who was with Gideon. And it shows the simple lack of faith of these men of Succoth, these princes of the city. Verse 7, so Gideon said, for this cause, when the Lord has delivered Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, then I will tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. So Gideon says, well, because you mock me this way, here's a promise for you that when I do get power over these two kings, I'll remember you and I'll come back. And then I'm going to tear your flesh with thorns and with briars. I'm going to teach you a serious lesson, basically about mocking the Lord's judge. Verse 8, then he went up from there to Penuel and spoke to them in the same way. And the men of Penuel answered him as the men of Succoth had answered. So he goes to another city nearby named Penuel, which means face of God. And it's the place where Jacob wrestled with God in the book of Genesis. Of course, very near Succoth. And he asks them the same favor of feeding his men. And he gets the same mocking response from the men of Penuel. Verse 9, so he also spoke to the men of Penuel, saying, when I come back in peace, I will tear down this tower. So he says, when I do return in peace, and I do return alive and victorious, well, then I'm going to take this tower, this stronghold of yours here in Penuel, and I'm going to tear it down. And that will teach a lesson. I'll remove your fortifications. And that will show you that, of course, that my fortification is the Lord, and you shouldn't have mocked him. Verse 10, now Zeba and Zalmunna were at Karkor, and their armies with them, about 15,000, all who were left of the army of the people of the east, for 120,000 men who drew the sword had fallen. So here we have Zeba and Zalmunna, and they have escaped, so they think, to Karkor, which means level ground or soft soil. And they are gathered there, and they're rallied their men, and they're ready to fight again, they think. And 15,000 is all who are left, and 120,000 have fallen. So they only have about a ninth of their army left. So you say, only 15,000, only a ninth part of their army. Well, that's nothing. Well, remember that Gideon's original force, whom Jehovah told him were too many for him to give them the victory over Midian, was about 12,020. And so they actually have more left than Gideon had originally. And compared to Gideon's 300, 15,000 seems an overwhelming number. But it's not, because remember, Jehovah is with Gideon. And so these Midianites are seriously outpowered. Verse 11, then Gideon went up by the road of those who dwell in tents on the east of Nobah and Jogbeha, and he attacked the army while the camp felt secure. So Gideon goes by the road of those who dwell in tents, or we might say the road of nomads, the road of those who don't have a permanent home. They're nomadic people. In this road, we read, and notice how intimately familiar our author is with the geography around Israel. This road ran east of Nobah, which means a barking. I guess maybe they had dogs around there. And runs east of Jogbeha, which means lofty. Obviously, that city was on a hill or a small mountain. So he goes down this road, and he comes on their camp, and he attacks the Midianite army. Now, they thought they were secure. They had rallied. They were ready for anything. But now Gideon defeats them. Now notice, remember last time, The Lord said he would have to defeat him with 300 men, and we saw how the victory came about. They blew trumpets, they broke pitchers and waved torches. The army panicked and attacked each other. But Gideon and his forces didn't have to do anything. They didn't attack, they didn't fight. So you could almost say that they won by a trick that time. But this time, there's no trick. This time, it's 300 versus 15,000, and yet it's the 15,000 who don't have a chance. Why? Because Jehovah, Yahweh, is on the side of Gideon. And so Midian is defeated thoroughly and soundly. Well, they had thought they were secure, but there is no security for those who fight against the Lord. Verse 12, when Zeba and Zalmunna fled, he pursued them, and he took the two kings of Midian, Zeba and Zalmunna, and routed the whole army. So the two kings, Zeba and Zalmunna, they tried to flee, but Gideon chased them and captured them. And he sent all that was remaining of their army, and I don't know how many he killed this time. He probably wiped out a lot of them. But all that remained of their army, they just fled in terror. And of course, who wouldn't be afraid when the Lord is fighting against you? But now Gideon has a job to do with these scoffers of his own people. Verse 13, then Gideon, the son of Joash, returned from battle from the ascent of Heres. So Gideon, Joash's son, returns from defeating the army of Midian. And it says here, from the ascent of Heres, or that could mean from the ascent of the sun. It could just mean that he came back before sunrise. So a day hadn't even passed by the time he returns to Succoth and to Penuel. So Yahweh had given him a swift victory. Verse 14, and he caught a young man of the men of Succoth and interrogated him. And he wrote down for him the leaders of Succoth and its elders, 77 men. So he catches a young man from Succoth, and perhaps he was going out to work early in the fields, because that's what they would do back then. They would live in the cities and work in the fields around the cities. So they capture him, and they say, describe for us the elders of Succoth. So he describes them, and he describes these 77 men who are the elders of the city. Because remember, these are the ones Gideon promised to punish. Verse 15, then he came to the men of Succoth and said, here are Zeba and Zalmunna, about whom you ridiculed me, saying, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna now in your hand, that we should give bread to your weary men? So he comes to these elders, and he gathers them together, and he shows them Zeba and Zalmunna. He says, remember when you mocked me and said, are Zeba and Zalmunna in your power, that we should feed you and your men? Well, here they are in my power. What do you say now, mockers? Verse 16, and he took the elders of the city and thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them he taught the men of Succoth. So he punished these elders of Succoth with thorns and briars. Hebrew is that he had them get to know these thorns and briars. That's the same phrase that's sometimes used for sexual intercourse. In other words, they had close personal contact with these thorns and briars. Then verse 17, then he tore down the tower of Penuel and killed the men of the city. Well, he beats down the tower of Penuel and he destroys the mortal men of the city. Now, this always raises a bit of a question in my mind. I mean, in Succoth, he gives these elders a serious contact with thorns and briars, which is very painful punishment, but at least they're still alive. Penuel, it's not just the elders, all the men of the city, he tears down the tower and kills the men of the city. Why so much more extreme punishment on Penuel when they had done basically the same thing as Succoth? Well, I don't know for sure, but because it doesn't tell us. And all I can think is perhaps they tried to stop him from tearing down their tower. So in order to do it, he had to put them to death. I don't know. Maybe they not only scoffed, but they also resisted God's judge and brought destruction on themselves. But one important thing I notice about this is that these scoffers, they don't get away with it. They feel very big mocking, throwing mocking words at Gideon, saying, we don't believe in your victory. When the time of the victory comes, they have to pay. And I think there should be a warning for all who scoff at the Lord and his words today. You might be able to get by with big sounding words, feeling very big mocking the Lord now. But don't doubt it for a moment, there will be a price to pay for scoffers. And your mocking words have not gone unnoticed. So you had best beware because the Lord will get the victory in the end. In this portion, Jehovah indeed gives Gideon a great victory, but his people refuse to believe in his call. And yet he got a great victory with just 300 men. Do we believe in the Lord's call of us to believe in Jesus Christ? Well, let's believe.
When men resist, defy, and mock God today, it seems as if they are getting away with it. But we must understand that this is only because we live in the dispensation of grace when God does not punish sin. But trust in this, one day the Lord will bring all things that offend under His feet, meaning under His judgment, under His rule. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on Gideon versus Zeba and Zalmunna. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with Gideon's Snare. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that listening to this program motivates you to more deeply study God's Word so that you may more deeply know God. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible Studies, write to the Word of Truth Ministry at P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.